Chapter 36. Zavala saw the bodies in the dawn light from the lead helicopter. The Huey was flying above treetop level, following the serpentine twists and turns of the river, when Zavala noticed the human flotsam caught in a sharp bend. He asked the pilot to go in for a closer look. The Huey banked over the water and hovered. Zavala leaned out its big door and inspected the bloated corpses. Then he radioed the second helicopter, which was making a wide, lazy circle above.
"Paul and Kurt, from where I can see, there's nothing to worry about. All the bodies appear to be male."
In other words, Gamay wasn't among the dead.
"Are you certain?" Trout replied. "As sure as I can be from up here."
Austin's voice cut in. "Thanks. This is a good place to make our insertion. Is our limo ready?"
"All gassed up and set to go."
"Good. Let's do it." The two helicopters on loan from the Mexican army had overflown the old ruins where Gamay had first been captured. Trout wanted his Numa teammates to have a total picture of Gamay and Chi's flight from start to finish. Trout flew over the rapids and continued downriver until the bodies were sighted. Zavala relayed Austin's command to the pilot. The Huey drifted out over the widest part of the river, then slowly descended until the large object slung under its belly touched the water. Zavala hit a release switch, and the helicopter lurched upward, relieved of the weight it had been carrying. The Huey moved out of the way, and the aircraft, carrying Austin and Trout, darted in to take its place. Austin was out the door first, quickly rappelling down a line into what looked like an oversized, vaguely banana-shaped bathtub. He released the rappel line and punched a starter button, then maneuvered the strange craft to keep it under Trout, who was descending the rope. A waterproof bag was lowered next. Trout guided it down. It was tricky going directly under the wash of air from the rotor. Trout's height gave him a first baseman's edge as he reached for the package holding their vital supplies. Although his dignified manner reflected his academic background and his lean frame suggested a frail physique, Trout had built up muscular shoulders and arms from his days as a commercial fisherman. He easily hoisted the swinging package off its hook, and the Huey moved away.
"I don't usually pick up hitchhikers, but you have an honest face," Austin yelled over the engine racket.
Trout smiled. Despite his worry about Gamay, he was happy to be doing something at last. He unclipped the handheld radio from his belt and talked into it.
"Thanks for bringing the limo around, Joe." "No problem. Better give it a test run before you take it for a spin."
The limo was a two-person seal, one of the smallest hovercraft made. The foam and fiberglass grass-green hull, with its rounded stern and sharp-pointed nose, was only 15 feet long. With the combined kick from its thrust propeller and lift fan, the seal could plane along on an air cushion, on water or land, with its payload, at a speed of up to 25 miles per hour. Recalling Nina Kirov's experience with the giant hovercraft, Austin had reasoned that the bad guys weren't the only ones who should be driving fun boats. The seal was designed for hunters and wildlife people who wanted to get into otherwise inaccessible locations. The special forces had modified the civilian model, adding brackets for a light machine gun, spotlight, and infrared night sensors. Austin goosed the 20-horsepower Briggs and Stratton engine and felt the craft rise out of the water on its air cushion. He tried some circles and loops, planing at high speeds and low. Satisfied that he had the hang of it, he turned the controls over to Trout. While Trout got accustomed to the feel of the little craft, Austin dug through their supply bag and pulled out his pistol and two Car 15s, the shortened carbine version of the M16. In addition to a rate of up to 950 rounds per minute on automatic, the weapon could be used as a grenade launcher. Austin would have been satisfied if no shot had to be fired. But he wasn't optimistic. He was no longer laughing at Trout's cami uniform, and had borrowed one of his own and covered his stark white hair with a matching fatigue cap. Nothing could have prepared them for the powerful stench as they approached the floating bodies. The Numa men dipped their neckerchiefs in the river and tied them over their noses before moving in closer. The bodies looked as if somebody had pumped air into them. Trout's mouth was clamped in a tight line as he made himself inspect each corpse one by one. When he was sure of what he had seen, he clicked the radio. "We're okay, Joe. Gamma isn't here."
"Glad to hear it, pal.
My guess is these are the guys who tried to shoot us out of the sky." He shivered, remembering Gamay's close call with the rapids. "We'll make a quick sweep down the river. She could be waiting just ahead for you and Kurt to rescue her. Thanks again for giving up your seat."
"No problemo, amigo."
There had been a brief discussion the night before over who would accompany Austin. Zavala was eager to go in, but he knew Trout should be there when they found Gamay, dead or alive. For a more practical reason, they needed someone in the command post who could speak Spanish and act as liaison with the Mexicans. An instant later, both Hueys disappeared over the treetops. Austin pointed the seal downriver and cranked her up. The hovercraft lifted above the water and leaped forward as if out of a slingshot. When he asked his special forces pals if they had anything that would get them in and out of tight places, Austin knew air reconnaissance could cover a lot of ground in a short time, but the lowland rainforest would hide anything as small as a human being. They took turns at the controls, keeping the seal at 20 miles per hour. For all their time on the river, Gamay and Chi had barely covered 50 miles since leaving the rapids. With the hovercraft's superior speed and no overnight stops, they would cover the same distance in a fraction of that time. Trout's sharp eye caught the glint of sunlight ahead in midstream. They pulled up to a tiny islet, and Trout stepped out. She had been scrupulous about not littering the island, but he had dropped a trail mix wrapper. Without a word, Trout stepped back into the boat and showed his find to Austin, who nodded, gunned the throttle, and notched their speed up to the limit. The game was afoot. The radio crackled, and Zavala's voice came on.
"Kurt, this is crazy."
"We hear you, Joe. What's going on?"
"I'm not sure. We were following the river ahead of you. It twists back and forth, then narrows after a while into sort of a canyon. No sign of Gamay or Chi, but we're tooling along, and all at once the river disappears."
"Say again?"
"The river just stopped. One second it was flowing along, the next it was gone."
"Where are you now?"
"We are conducting a search pattern to see if we can pick it up again. If not, we'll come up river and meet you."
The many hovercraft continued to skim along. They, too, noticed the narrowing of the river and the increasing steepness of the walls. Zavala came on the radio again.
"Nothing, Kurt. We're going to have to head back. The choppers are running low on gas."
They had brought extra fuel and left it back at the ruins. It wouldn't take them long at their speed to get back, fuel up, and return to the river search. Austin said he and Trout would go as far downriver as they could and rendezvous with the Hueys. They waved as helicopters flashed overhead on their way back to refuel, and the hovercraft continued on its way. They were in the gorge, moving even faster with a kick from the current, when they saw the pram. It was jammed into the mud along the shore. Austin pulled the hovercraft onto the beach, and he and Paul jumped out. The pram was loaded with cartons, and it was probably their weight that kept the current from dislodging the boat and pulling it back into the river.
"What do you think, Paul?"
"I'd say they were never in this pram.
My guess is that they were towing it. Look, it's so full there isn't room for anyone to sit. The outboard's in its up position. This bow line has been cut.
Austin pulled at a thin rubber hose.
You're right. Look, the motor's fuel hose isn't even connected to the gas tank.
They shoved the pram farther onto the shore and moments later were back in the hovercraft.
They were only moving for a few minutes when the river ended. Austin gave the hovercraft more power to hold it in one place.
"That's the answer to Joe's disappearing river," Trout said. "No mystery. It just runs underground."
He tried to reach Zavala on the radio but got no answer, and assumed they were out of range or the transmission was blocked by the high rocky walls. They decided without hesitation to push ahead. They went in slowly, coming down from their air cushion, Trout illuminating the way with his handheld spotlight. The vibration and noise created by the thrust propeller unnerved the bats. They came off the roof as if blown by a gust of wind, a squeaking mass of flapping membranous wings and sharp claws. Austin doubled their speed. The hovercraft was on its air cushion again. Both men crouched low in the open cockpit, hardly able to see through the flying swarm of black, furry bodies. The craft bounced off the rocky shores several times, but as long as he was able to go forward, Austin kept the pedal to the metal. Then they were through it and into the clear. Austin brought the engine down to an idle, and the current moved them ahead.
"Are you okay?" he asked.
"My hair will probably go as white as yours, but other than that, I'm fine. Let's keep going."
The sound of the motor was horrendous in the close confines, echoing and re-echoing off the rough walls. Austin could only hope that any adversaries they met were stone deaf, because their arrival would have been announced for miles. They moved at a steady clip, throwing up waves on either side, and before long they emerged into the larger cavern. They made a quick circle of the pool to get their bearings, and saw that the river ended again, but that there was a canal leading off from it. The canal ended at a small pier illuminated by a lantern. They tied up next to three prams and left the hovercraft. With their weapons at ready, they proceeded along the walkway into the quarry. They stopped to inspect the contents of the boxes, then pressed on. Sunlight was shining faintly in the distance.